Hello, hello, everybody. Today's Wednesday, September 5th, and we're just going to be doing a half episode, 122.5. No block height today, because I think that would actually kill my laptop to open a Block Explorer. But yeah, Rick couldn't join us because the schedule just got a little cluster fucked when I ran away. So yeah, I'm pretty much just partying in Germany. But what's going on with you, Janine?
Well, I was kind of doing that partying thing as well, but that's now over for me.
Well, I will keep the party going.
Just a bunch of people convincing me to start drinking alcohol, and I've said numerous times that I do not do that.
It's peer pressure. All right, so I guess it's just three kind of short things today that I think all kind of connect in some different way. So I guess we'll just start off with the first one. So yesterday, I think this is, if I'm getting my days right, Shapeshift announced a huge change in the core business model. And they're going to be transitioning into kind of a membership-based platform and eventually make that mandatory, where you're going to have to provide KYC information and actually dox yourself to be able to use this platform. And pretty much Voorhees just seems like he's kind of trying to spin this in a positive way. Like, you know, this, our core business model used to be founded on privacy and not having an account in order to protect customers. But we're going to have to transition into this. And pretty much in his words, I think it was try to be smart, because they have to do this. And really, there's like, and here's kind of the platitudes of, we remain committed to that cause, our previous vision, and it's best served if we are smart about our approach. And so in reaction to this, BTC Pay has announced that they're probably going to drop support for the Shapeshift button, which enabled very seamless acceptance of altcoins and just shifting them over into Bitcoin from the merchant's point of view. But, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of different reactions in terms of businesses dropping support for this. And I mean, the first thing that really comes to mind for me would be Edge Wallet, which if everybody follows along, I've been kind of giving a lot of crap for the Shapeshift integration and trying to act like they don't have a monetary incentive to push the use of altcoins, even though they're directly compensated in a fee-sharing agreement for integrating the Shapeshift button. But there's really kind of two things I want to talk about in dealing with this. And the first one is obviously like the core business model, as he's trying to spin it, is to protect customers' privacy and security and not having to keep records. But the other thing I think this is going to kind of affect is potentially the fundamental economic aspect of their business model, because right now they're functioning as a broker. So like when you sell coins, you're actually selling them to Shapeshift. And when you buy coins, you're buying them from Shapeshift, so that they're actually performing like the brokering in the middle there. And it's not like a traditional exchange where other people bring their assets and just establish an order book. And so at this point, I'm kind of unclear as to how much they might have to restructure that aspect of the business in response to this, because the fees as high as they are on there, unless they can bring those down, then like there's not really an incentive to use this. Like the whole value proposition of the platform was you'll pay the little bit of a higher fee, but you don't have to provide your identity. No records are kept. You can just move between different cryptocurrencies. And so like I'm wondering, like, are they going to try and maintain that brokerage aspect of the business and just try to bring the fees down a little bit in line, or are they going to make a full-on shift to an order book exchange? Sorry, guys, just one second.
Yeah, so I saw this yesterday, and it doesn't really surprise me because I'm pretty sure that, I mean, Erik Voorhees, I know, has a presence in the United States, and I think Shapeshift is also based there. I think it's actually based in Colorado. So it does not surprise me that an exchange that is based in the United States is facing this kind of pressure, especially one that, at least on its face, was not collecting information about its users. Obviously, I think they still plug into chain analytics, as some people have alleged. But yeah, it does not surprise me. Like, this is what happens. Like, it's going to happen to any cryptocurrencies that are based in the US that have like their main development team members based in the US. It's going to happen to exchanges. So this does not really surprise me. And it also does not surprise me that the Shapeshift was of the exchange model was kind of being covered up by all of this language about loyalty programs and a new token and all of that to distract people from the fact that they are basically coming under regulatory pressure, and that is why they're doing this. Like, you can tell it's they don't spell it out directly in the blog post, but it's clear from the language that they use about the fact that they say they're going to be doing this KYC thing, even though they really don't like it. They think it sucks. It's like, well, why are you doing it then? What there's nothing, they don't ever explain why it's necessary as part of the model. They just kind of imply that they're being forced to do it. And a statement by Erik Voorhees, actually on Twitter, where, I mean, most people are taking it as some kind of canary about the situation, but he said that things that he is saying are being watched very closely and he can't talk right now, or please give them time to explain later, or something like that. So it's pretty obvious to me that this is more about the KYC aspect and not about any loyalty program. Also, it's kind of funny because my thread that I made about it on Twitter, I actually show an interaction that I had with Voorhees back in 2016, where it was regarding a blog post he had written about their hack that had recently happened. And one of the words that he used was social serfdom number instead of social security number. And I quite like that language. So yeah, it's kind of funny that, 2 years later, now he's in a position where he's probably going to be asking for information like that as part of his business. So yeah.
And I mean, like the whole thing is like, not only are you really destroying the value add of how the exchange worked previously, but you're going to have to deal with massive restructuring, like however far you want to take it, to really try and continue providing some kind of value proposition. And I mean, ultimately, if they do try to transition to a full-on order book-based exchange, well, as a broker, like they adjust it based on the market demand, but they're actually holding large amounts of the coins that they trade in. And so, to really go the whole way to an order book exchange, if they don't try to retain the brokerage or brokerage aspect of the business, there's going to be a lot of bags that they have to potentially dump to de-risk themselves of those liabilities, and kind of the higher fee on top of like that risk, it really draws into question the kind of viability of the business in the long term, just how big of a hit they're actually going to take. So like I'm just not really sure how viable this is going to be for them to transition from the kind of business aspect of things, let alone that this is very clearly regulators breathing down their neck just because of the lack of KYC and their worries about that. But I guess kind of potentially related, another piece of news is Civic, Vinnie Lingham's identity project, has also kind of in this very short time period announced that they're going to be spending $43 million, which is roughly, I guess at current prices, around a third of their holdings from the ICO tokens, into trying to bootstrap an actual customer base for the Civic platform, which is really the big problem that they've been having. Is like, for the most part, the technology in terms of the identity side of things is mostly built out and working. It's just not many people are using it. And so for the next, you know, roughly year or so, they're just going to be pretty much covering the costs of verification, because the entire platform was designed around like using this token to pay a verifier for attesting to an identity, and just try to build up the actual network effect of people using the platform. And I find it very weird and suspicious that this is happening right after the announcement with Shapeshift, you know, having to switch over to KYC and start collecting information on people. And I'm kind of wondering right now if this behind the scenes is kind of a deal being worked out between Eric and Vinny, where like it's an opportunity here, like from Eric's point of view, like here's a way where he can kind of appease the regulators and provide some kind of KYC standard for, you know, bringing in new customers and verifying existing ones. And here's an opportunity for Vinny to kind of give Eric the tool he needs and pull people into this project that's pretty much not been being used anywhere since they actually went through the fundraising process for things. And so I very much think here, especially with previous relationships between Shapeshift and Civic, that there's some kind of back scratching or favor trading going on here to kind of help each other out and facilitate this kind of caving to the pressures of the regulators right now. I mean, it just seems like over the past year or so, like they are not happy with any type of service in this ecosystem that you can use without verifying an identity. And I think Vinny's kind of just jumping on the bandwagon here and going, you can use my project for this, and just trying to milk this situation as much as he possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pressure going on at the moment for all of these different things to add KYC. And one of them that I kind of challenged was actually the sponsor, one of the sponsors of the Lightning Hack Day conference that we attended, and which was Bitfury. And I challenged them, if you want to see it, it's actually, I don't know which number live stream it is, but it's the one where Bitfury is giving their talk, and it's, I think, an hour and, let me check for a second. It's at 4 hours, 1 minute, and 52 seconds in, if you want to see. But I challenged them about the fact that, you know, they're starting to look into Lightning stuff at the same time that another part of their company or another branch is building Crystal, which is marketed directly to law enforcement. And they're trying to couch it, you know, they're trying to do their own cover-up too, where they're saying that Crystal help. There's a claim in the original marketing statement that we've gone over, I think, twice before on this show, where they say that it will help the Bitcoiners improve their privacy, which makes absolutely no sense. Like, their incentive model for helping Bitcoiners with their privacy is not at all aligned with a tool that they're selling to law enforcement in order to do the exact opposite, which is to decrease privacy in Bitcoin. And I challenged them on that. And the response, which you can see for yourself, was very interesting. It was mostly about there's a need to make law enforcement comfortable, and that for Bitcoin to achieve mass adoption, we need KYC, which, I mean, you know, maybe that makes sense for someone living in a very safe Western nation that is not subject to massive currency restriction and control and devaluation. But for someone living in a country where most of the people don't even have identity documents to even sign up for any of these KYC services to begin with, it makes absolutely no sense to say that KYC helps mass adoption, because in fact, the reality is the opposite. If you require people to prove their identity or prove a history of, I don't know, good intentions or good business interactions or what have you, that you are a sanctioned citizen who has done nothing that the state might disapprove of, most people will not be able to fulfill that requirement. And so if you make that a requirement as part of your ecosystem, that means you're excluding billions of people who just don't even have the option to participate because they were not lucky enough to be born in a country where identity documents are more likely to be had by people living there. So yeah, these very half-hearted apologists, surveillance apologists opinions do not interest me. And I think, you know, to be fair to Eric, even though he and Shapeshift participated in the whole SegWit2x thing last year, I think he knows better, as by, you know, from reading his tweets and also the poor way that the blog post was written. It was so obvious that they were just covering up for the KYC stuff. Like, he knows better. He knows better. He knows that, you know, that's what he's doing, and he's probably ashamed of it. At least he's not, you know, going on Twitter and being, you know, in favor of, you know, KYC directly. He knows that, he at least acknowledges that it's a problem, but they're being forced to use it. And according to him, this is how he should pick his battle. So let's see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, like the tweet thread where he kind of made that comment that what he was saying was being watched very closely, like that was in response to somebody telling him, well, you should just shut down the business at this point. I mean, like, if they're going to be requiring collection of all customers' information right now, I mean, that's literally the whole point of this business, was to structure something like this where you don't have to collect people's private information. And I mean, being pressured by the government, by regulators, to institute those kinds of policies, I mean, like, shut it down. Like, he has other businesses. He has the Salt lending platform. Like, he's done a lot of things in this ecosystem. He's doing very well personally. Like, shut this business down and go look at something else. I mean, like, because it's like right now, just looking at this dynamic with Vinny and trying to subsidize Civic, like, it seems like the exact opposite of the platitudes he's offering. Like, instead of trying to actually keep things moving in a direction where you can safeguard people's information, it's just a money grab where it's like, let's try to keep people coming in and collect their information, because fuck it, we can make money off of it still. And I mean, it just very much makes me not trust him and his intentions that he didn't just shut this down. I mean, like, that really would have changed my opinion of him after the entire SegWit2x debacle. If he just shut this down, that would really make me assess his reasons for participating in that. But his reaction, like, this is just another thing that makes me not trust him. Like, it makes me look at him as just an opportunistic weasel who doesn't really care about any of the ideology that most people in this space are here for. He's just here to find money wherever he can, and he doesn't give a shit what he has to do to get it.
I mean, yeah, it's entirely possible he's also being directly used, and that he is, by some weird legal construct, unable to shut down the business because Shapeshift has been co-opted. Entirely possible. Also entirely possible, the simplest answer is that people just continue what they're doing and not always follow their principles, because sunk cost fallacy, he's put now, what, 4 years into this business, so maybe he doesn't feel like it's worth it to stand up for his principles if the consequence of that is shutting down his only business that he's run. So
mm-hmm. Fair enough. But I guess the last thing on the docket, kind of also something that really makes me think that there is some consistent regulatory pressure going on. But Goldman Sachs has officially kind of put the kibosh on opening a trading desk in the near term, which is something they've really been talking about and playing up for probably the last 6 months or so, and kind of decided they're just going to move in the direction of trying to offer some kind of custodial product for other institutions or investors to utilize to actually store their currency. And like this just like it doesn't make sense to me at face value looking at this, with how much money and how much PR they've put into like building this up and kind of looking at like, come to us if you want to trade in these things. Like, we're an established bank, an established financial firm, and we know how these kinds of things operate. And then to just out of nowhere, around the same time that Shapeshift is kind of instituting these KYC policies because of pressure from regulators, like, it's, I feel like there has to be something going on in terms of coming regulatory changes that just made them think this is not a viable thing right now. And I mean, like, I really can't like get away from reading into this like this. And especially like the pivot to concentrate solely on custodial solutions for things, it just seems kind of strange, because it tells me that something is going on in terms of regulation or proposed regulation or whatever you want to assume. Very skeptical or even maybe even aware that this is just not going to be allowed for them to directly trade or broker these kinds of things themselves. But moving into custodial solutions to hold the actual crypto assets for other companies tells me that it's not going to just be disallowed or some huge crackdown across the entire ecosystem as a whole. Because like, why would they pivot and start concentrating on custodial solutions for other people if they think that like this entire market is going to be closed off for everybody? So like, you know, kind of reading here, I think that something is happening or not happening in terms of changes they were expecting that would affect a major bank or financial institution from dealing with these products, but at the same time, like not something that's going to prevent any like institution or fund whatsoever from holding them, because then there would be no reason to actually develop it for other people. And so it seems really weird that this is happening literally after the Shapeshift announcement and the pressure to implement KYC. I really feel like something has to be going on that is going to have some degree of large impact on the space, given like these things happening so closely together. And, you know, in a way where it's like that there has to be some kind of similar reason to this, just given the synchronicity of it and the same kind of scope of things that it would affect.
Yep. And as usual, when stuff like this is announced, and it also accompanies a relatively similar timed drop in the Bitcoin price, people think that this is somehow causation. But I don't really care about that stuff. And to be honest, if people think that a large financial institution like Goldman Sachs not, you know, deciding to jump in and be a custodian for other large institutional players who want to hold Bitcoin, I don't really care about that, so it shouldn't drop the price. Like, I get all the arguments for like liquidity and institutional validation and all of that, but yeah, I don't fundamentally care. So Goldman Sachs taking a bit more time, yeah, that's good with me, because I'm not like I'm ever going to use it.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I really don't like kind of looking at these types of things and trying to really draw correlations with the market. I mean, like the second I got on the plane, like it was pumping the whole way up, and I literally expected it to just crash again. What the second I got off the plane, when I would actually have to start spending money. And you know, I'm honestly shocked that it took like almost a week before like that big stab down, and I didn't really have to take a hit the whole time I was out here spending money. I mean, it worked for me. Like, you know, I'm able to save a little bit of money kind of just running around the city, but like I really can't look at that crash down and just be like, oh, this is because of this Shapeshift news or the Goldman Sachs news. Like that, I was expecting that from the second I got on the plane. Like, it just shot up, it shoots back down. That's what it does. Like, you can't really definitively point at one thing and go, this is the reason. That's not how markets work.
All right. So what's our new mantra? Because mantra used to be use Tor, use Signal in terms of the private messaging advocacy. So new mantra is use Bisq, use Cold Card.
You use Bisq, use anything secure for managing your keys. I mean, use anything peer to peer in person. I mean, like I've said before that, if you go on a website and there's an email address or there's a phone number, you can just use those. I mean, there's really nothing stopping you from taking an email address and writing an email to it, or a phone number and making a phone call. So, if you see those things and you want to make a move, make a move. But I guess,
Don't want any of your KYC. Should we get to
Yeah.
the even bigger crash, which is the Bitcoin Cash bromance?
Oh my God. Yes, that I don't even really have any links for it. I've just kind of been like looking and laughing at it, but like, oh my God.
Are you serious? I put like a whole
Like,
list of the whole thing.
yeah, like
It's like a
I don't
net. It's
know,
a nest. It's a, like a nested breakup.
like Craig apparently blocked Roger, and then like they've had a falling out. Like it's like I can't even keep track of all the people who like were unfollowing each other on Twitter. I think Craig or Jihan, I forget who unfollowed Jujitsu, Jerry Chan. Cobra actually followed Craig Wright for some strange reason earlier today, I think, but it's like it's like a bar brawl at this point, right? With people constantly changing sides. Like,
Oh, come on, you gotta show some of the links because I have a list. Craig unfollows Rod. Actually, because the thing between Craig and Roger, people are just saying they mutually unfollowed each other, but some other people were saying that Craig actually blocked Roger after unfollowing him.
yeah, he Roger actually posted on RBTC on Reddit that Craig blocked him, and so the big blocker bot, it just kind of polls like who's following who periodically, and it just saw they unfollowed each other. Like it doesn't really see what caused that. It just sees that they're not following each other anymore. But
Yeah.
Craig blocked Roger, according to
So
Roger.
the list that I have, if you want to like pull up any of those, I have Craig and Roger unfollowing each other. I have Gavin Andreessen and Craig Wright unfollowing each other. Gavin and Emin unfollowing each other. Amory and Ryan X Charles. I think that's, is it Amory? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I
The
think so.
Deedlenecks and Ryan X Charles unfollowing each other, Craig Wright and Amory unfollowing each other, Cobra and Craig unfollowing each other, Jihan and Cobra unfollowing each other, Craig and Jihan unfollowing each other. Like, yeah. So that's the list that I had.
Yes, sorry for the lack of screen shares, guys, but this laptop only has like 4 gigs of RAM, and I don't have a swap space set up, so kind of limited on resources unless I want this to die in the middle of everything.
But yeah, I find it particularly funny because I don't know, 12 months ago, they were all, happy go lucky dudes that were going to make sure that Bitcoin Cash became the real Bitcoin in everyone's eyes, and now they've all broken up with each other in the same couple of days that the third Lightning hack day was happening in Germany. And everything was going fine for us. Like, Lightning is working. People were paying for M&Ms. People were buying beers and burgers at Room 77. So Lightning is doing fine and it's working. Bitcoin Cash, not so much. In fact, they're doing so badly that they used a stress test that they recently did just to figure out like how many transactions or whatever can it take. And they use that as like a proof of Bitcoin Cash being popular. They like Roger tweeted out this graph saying, "Look, Bitcoin Cash had more transactions today than all of the other coins combined." And it's like, yeah, that's what happens when you do a stress test, but that's not organic activity. That's just people, probably the same small group of people that have always been only using Bitcoin Cash, doing multiple transactions over and over again. Like, not, I'm pretty sure if you did a graph analysis or something of that, you'd see that most of the transactions weren't even going to other people. Most of them were probably just being sent to other addresses owned by the same people. So it's like, it's useless economic activity.
Mm-hmm. And to boot, it knocked 15% of Bitcoin ABC nodes offline. And it didn't even consider, like, I don't think there was even a single 32 megabyte block in the entire test. I think the biggest one was like 23 megabytes or something. And on average, it was only like 3 to 5 megabytes, I think. And that knocked nodes offline.
Yeah, actually, the biggest one that I heard, I don't know who said it, the biggest one that I saw someone say was 10 megabytes, but even that, it's like, come on, guys, that's not even using the full block capacity, so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just not really going so well for them, and we're kind of cranking out the actual things that are going to scale out and give people a viable way to use things. I mean, who would have thought, right?
It's like that. I don't know what they were trying to accomplish with that test. If it was to prove that they have a lot of space in their blocks, it's like, yes, we get it. You have a lot of space, but no one really cares. Sometimes the fees on Bitcoin have been lower than on Bitcoin Cash, even though Bitcoin Cash has much more block capacity. Like, I don't know what they were trying to prove. I
think it was that the network could handle it, which is why it's so funny that 15% of nodes were knocked offline and they didn't even push it to like the full limit.
Well, I mean, their response would just be that nodes don't matter. Like, who cares if some get knocked offline? You're just not good enough for us or something.
They're just going to fragment into like 3 or 4 different networks, and it will cause an unbelievable amount of headaches for the exchanges listing them. And I think it's really going to have exchanges rethinking like the criteria for listing things and really how long they want to take assessing that before they actually make a decision. I don't know. If you've got any more final thoughts you want to toss out, Janine, I think I'm pretty much spent kind of just making everybody in the room be quiet. I'm really kind of thankful for that.
Yeah, let's see. The only thing I can think of, well, I'm still getting a lot of attention on my Vitalik call out, I guess you could say. Apparently his bots did not find that one or chose to stay away from that one. Just kind of funny. So I mean, is there anything specific like you want to say about how the conference went?
It was pretty awesome. I mean, I stayed out very late the night before and got very drunk, so I missed Christian Decker's talk, but I caught Jonas Nick's talk on Taproot and Schnorr. If you're at all like confused or unclear specifically about Taproot, watch Jonas Nick's talk on that. I think that was probably the clearest, best presentation of how that works that I've seen yet. I really wanted to see Giacomo's talk on RGB, but I missed that. Adam Gibson did a CoinJoin workshop where everybody was just kind of brainstorming different ways, specifically with Lightning, that CoinJoin could be utilized, and that went on a little late. So I actually missed Giacomo's talk and then the app demonstrations, which pissed me off because if I'd known Room 77 got Lightning set up, I would have set a Clair up and loaded that so I could pay in Lightning. So kind of disappointed I didn't get to do that, but it was pretty interesting all around, especially the workshop. I think I don't know, this being like the kind of first hackathon or event that I've been to in person, I really think like those are the more interesting side of things, is where everybody just like collaboratively like discusses things back and forth instead of just a presentation on something that's a lot more formulated.
Yeah, I definitely like, I mean, it's probably not going to be like this forever because the first two hack days had a lot fewer people. Like everyone fit into what was actually the office building of some kind of, I think it was a Chinese investment company that has connections in Europe, or that's part of their business is making connections between Chinese investors and European investors, I think. They all fit into that tiny office, and they had to get a bigger venue because there's going to be more people. So it's probably not, I don't know, it depends if they purposely try to keep it more close-knit, but I definitely like that you're actually able to talk to all of the people speaking, and it's not just, hey, put this person on stage, they talk, and then they go, and then we're just supposed to sit there and clap. So I like that. I also liked, probably people saw that Excellion gave out some Reckless Lightning hats, and if you got one of those, if you look at the tag on the hat, the care instructions for like how to wash and stuff, the first instruction is HODL, so that's pretty cool. It's like a custom care sticker.
Yeah, that was awesome. It's the little details that make those things hilarious.
My favorite, just not related to the event, kind of a random tweet that I saw, was about these very persistent ETHs giveaway scammers that are still going around on Twitter. And apparently Pope Francis got one. He made a tweet saying, "We Christians are not selling a product, we are communicating a lifestyle." And then below that, he had his own Pope Francis ETH scammer saying that we're doing a Pope. Actually, they call him Pape Francis. They didn't even spell his Pape Francis official giveaway. I was actually for BTC, but yeah. So the Pope has his ETH giveaway scammers now. It's a lifestyle, guys. The giveaways are a lifestyle.
Yeah, that is so absurd. Yeah, I guess, you know, that rounds it up, and I'm probably going to get right back to drinking a whole bunch of random German beers, but,
yeah. No, you got to go to the bunker, Shinobi.
I'm going to go drink some German beers, and there's nothing you can do to stop me, but, I should be back in the States.
There's nothing I can do to stop you now.
Yeah, so by Sunday, I should be back. Schedule should be on track. The lack of episodes since I left has been entirely my fault, so everybody can scream at me if they're mad. Janine and Rick had nothing to do except just deal with it.
Well, it's fine, because some of those days we were also busy, so no problem.
So I guess on that note, toodaloo, everybody, and we'll see y'all on Sunday.
Be reckless.